I realized with a start that he could be standing feet away, watching me as his twisted game unfolded. The overhead light faded, and I made a frantic survey of the hall. More endless hallways stretched ahead. The library was up a short flight of stairs to my left. Classrooms started to the right. On a split moment's decision, I chose the library, groping through the blackening halls to get away from Jules's body. My nose dripped, and I realized I was crying soundlessly. Why was Jules dead? Who killed him? If Jules was dead, was V also? The library doors were unlocked, and I fumbled my way inside. Past the bookshelves at the far end of the library were three small study rooms. They were soundproof. If Elliot wanted to isolate V, the rooms were an ideal place to put her. I was just about to start toward them when a masculine groan carried through the library. I came to a halt. The lights out in the hall powered to life, illuminating the darkness of the library. Elliot's body lay a few feet away, his mouth parted, his skin ashen. His eyes rolled my way, and he reached an arm out to me. A piercing scream escaped me. Whirling around, I ran for the library doors, shoving and kicking chairs out of my way. "Run," I ordered myself. "Get to an exit." I staggered out the door, and that's when the lights in the hall died, plunging everything once again to black. "Patch!" I tried to scream, but my voice caught and I choked on his name. Jules was dead. Elliot was almost dead. Who had killed them? Who was left? I tried to make sense of what was happening, but all reason had left me. A shove to my back threw me off balance. Another shove sent me flying sideways, my head smashed against a locker, stunning me. A narrow beam of light swept across my vision, and a pair of dark eyes behind a ski mask swirled into focus. The light came from a miner's headlamp secured over the mask. I pushed up and tried to run. One of his arms shot out, cutting off my escape. He brought up his other arm, trapping me against the locker. "Did you think I was dead?" I could hear the gloating, icy smile in his voice. "I couldn't pass up one last chance to play with you. Humor me. Who did you think the bad guy was? Elliot? Or did it cross your mind that your best friend could do this? I'm getting warm, aren't I? That's the thing about fear. It brings out the worst in us."
"It's you."
My voice rattled. Jules ripped off the headlamp and ski mask.
"In the flesh."
"How did you do it?" I asked, my voice still trembling. "I saw you. You weren't breathing. You were dead."
"You're giving me too much credit. It was all you, Nora. If your mind wasn't so weak, I couldn't have done a thing. Am I making you feel bad? Is it discouraging to know that out of all the minds I've invaded, yours tops the list as easiest and most fun?"
I licked my lips. My mouth tasted a strange combination of dry and sticky. I could smell the fear on my breath.
"Where's V?"
He slapped my cheek.
"Don't change the subject. You really should learn to control your fear. Fear undermines logic and opens up all sorts of opportunities for people like me."
This was a side of Jules I'd never seen. He'd always been so quiet, so sullen, radiating a complete lack of interest in everyone around him. He stayed in the background, drawing little attention, little suspicion. Very clever of him, I thought. He grabbed my arm and jerked me after him. I clawed at him and twisted away, and he drove his fist into my stomach. I stumbled backward, gasping for air that did not come. My shoulder dragged down a locker until I sat crumpled on the floor. A ribbon of air slipped down my throat, and I choked on it. Jules touched the tracks my nails had carved in his forearm.
"That's going to cost you."
"Why did you bring me here? What do you want?"
I couldn't keep the hysteria from my voice. He yanked me up by my arm and dragged me farther down the hall. Kicking a door open, he thrust me inside and I went down, my palms colliding with the hard floor. The door slammed behind me. The only light came from the headlamp, which Jules held. The air held the familiar odors of chalk dust and stale chemicals. Posters of the human body and cross-sections of human cells decorated the walls. A long, black granite counter with a sink stood at the front of the room. It faced rows of matching granite lab tables. We were inside Coach McConaughey's biology room. A flash of metal caught my eye. A scalpel lay on the floor, tucked against the wastebasket. It must have been overlooked by both Coach and the janitor. I slid it into the waistband of my jeans just as Jules hauled me to my feet.
I had to cut the electricity, he said, setting the headlamp on the nearest table. You can't play hide-and-seek in the light.
Scraping two chairs across the floor, he positioned them facing each other.
Have a seat.
It didn't sound like an invitation. My eyes darted to the panel of windows spanning the far wall. I wondered if I could crank one open and escape before Jules caught me. Amid a thousand other self-preserving thoughts, I told myself not to appear frightened. Somewhere in the back of my mind, I remembered that advice from a self-defense class I'd taken with Mom after my dad died. Make eye contact. Look confident. Use common sense. All easier said than done. Jules pushed down on my shoulders, forcing me into a chair. The cold metal seeped through my jeans.
Give me your cell phone, he ordered,
hand held out for it. I left it in the car. He breathed a laugh.
Do you really want to play games with me? I've got your best friend locked somewhere in the building. If you play games with me, she's going to feel left out. I'll have to think up an extra special game to make it up to her.
I dug out the phone and passed it over. With superhuman strength, he bent it in half.
Now it's just the two of us.
He sank into the chair facing mine and stretched his legs out luxuriously. One arm dangled off the seat back.
Let's talk, Nora.
I bolted from the chair. Jules hooked me around the waist before I'd made it four steps and shoved me back into the chair.
I used to own horses, he said. A long time ago in France, I had a stable of beautiful horses. The Spanish horses were my favorite. They were caught wild and brought directly to me. Within weeks, I had them subdued. But there was always the rare horse that refused to be broken. Do you know what I did with a horse that refused to be broken?
I shuddered for an answer.
Cooperate and you have nothing to fear, he said.
I didn't for one moment believe him. The gleam in his eyes wasn't sincere. I saw Elliot in the library. I was surprised by the waver in my voice. I didn't like or trust Elliot, but he didn't deserve to die slowly and in pain. Did you hurt him? He scooted closer, as if to share a secret.
If you're going to commit a crime, never leave evidence. Elliot's been an integral part of everything. He knows too much.
Is that why I'm here? Because of the article I found about Kirsten Halverson? Jules smiled.
Elliot failed to mention that you know about Kirsten.
Did Elliot kill her? Or did you? I asked on a cold snap of inspiration.
I had to test Elliot's loyalty. I took away what was most important. Elliot was at Kinghorn on scholarship, and nobody let him forget it. Until me. I was his benefactor. In the end, it came down to choosing me or Kirsten. More succinctly, choosing money or love. Apparently there's no pleasure in being a pauper among princes. I bought him off. And that's when I knew I could rely on him when it came time to dealing with you.
Why me?
You haven't figured it out yet.
The light highlighted the ruthlessness in his face and created the illusion that his eyes had turned the color of molten silver.
I've been toying with you, dangling you by a string, using you as a proxy because the person I really want to harm can't be harmed. Do you know who that person is?
All the knots in my body seemed to come undone. My eyes moved out of focus. Jules's face was like an impressionist painting, blurred around the edges, lacking detail. Blood drained from my head, and I felt myself start to slip off the chair. I'd felt this way enough times before to know I needed iron. Soon. He slapped my cheek again.
Focus! Who am I talking about?
I don't know. I couldn't push my voice above a whisper.
Do you know why he can't be hurt? Because he doesn't have a human body. His body lacks physical sensation. If I locked him up and tortured him, it wouldn't do any good. He can't feel. Not an ounce of pain. Surely you've got a guess by now. You've been spending a lot of time with this person. Why so silent, Nora? Can't figure it out?
A trickle of sweat crept down my back.
Every year at the start of the Hebrew month of Cheshvan, he takes control of my body. 2 whole weeks. That's how long I forfeit control. No freedom, no choice. I don't get the luxury of escaping during those 2 weeks, loaning my body out, then coming back when it's all over. Then I might be able to convince myself it wasn't really happening. No, I'm still in there, a prisoner inside my own body, living every moment of it, he said in a grinding tone. Do you know what that feels like? Do you? He shouted. I kept my mouth shut, knowing that to talk would be dangerous. Jules laughed, a rush of air through his teeth. It sounded more sinister than anything I'd ever heard. He said, I swore an oath allowing him to take possession of my body during Heshvan. I was 16 years old. He shrugged, but it was a rigid movement. He tricked me into the oath by torturing me. After he told me I wasn't human. Can you believe it? Not human. He told me my mother, a human, slept with a fallen angel. He grinned odiously, sweat sprinkling his forehead. Did I mention I inherited a few traits from my father? Just like him, I'm a deceiver. I make you see lies. I make you hear voices. Just like this. Can you hear me, Nora? Are you frightened yet? He tapped my forehead. What's going on in there, Nora? Awfully quiet. Jules was Chauncey. He was Nephilim. I remembered my birthmark and what Dabria had told me. Jules and I shared the same blood. In my veins was the blood of a monster. I shut my eyes and a tear slid out. Remember the night we first met? I jumped in front of the car you were driving. It was dark and there was fog. You were already on edge, which made it that much easier to deceive you. I enjoyed scaring you. That first night gave me a taste for it. I would have noticed it was you, I whispered. There aren't many people as tall as you. You're not listening. I can make you see whatever I want. Do you really think I'd overlook a detail as condemning as my height? You saw what I wanted you to see. You saw a nondescript man in a black ski mask. I sat there, feeling a tiny crack in my terror. I wasn't crazy. Jules was behind all of it. He was the crazy one. He could create mind games because his father was a fallen angel and he'd inherited the power. You didn't really ransack my bedroom, I said. You just made me think you did. That's why it was still in order when the police arrived. He applauded slowly and deliberately. Do you want to know the best part? You could have blocked me out. I couldn't have touched your mind without your permission. I reached in and you never resisted. You were weak. You were easy. It all made sense. And instead of feeling a brief moment of relief, I realized how susceptible I was. I was stripped wide open. There was nothing stopping Jules from sucking me into his mind games, unless I learned to block him out. Imagine yourself in my place, said Jules. Your body violated year after year. Imagine a hatred so hard, nothing but revenge will cure it. Imagine expending large sums of energy and resources to keep a close eye on the object of your revenge, waiting patiently for the moment when fate presented you an opportunity not just to get even, but to tip the scales in your favor. His eyes locked on mine. You're that opportunity. If I hurt you, I hurt Patch. You're overestimating my value to Patch, I said, cold sweat breaking out along my hairline. I've been keeping a close eye on Patch for centuries. Last summer he made his first trip to your house, though you didn't notice. He followed you shopping a few times. Every now and then he made a special trip out of his way to find you. Then he enrolled at your school. I couldn't help but ask myself, what was so special about you? I made an effort to find out. I've been watching you for a while now. Nothing short of dread gripped me. Right then, I knew it was never my dad's presence I'd felt, following me like a phantom guardian. It was Jules. I felt the same ice-cold, unearthly presence now, only amplified 100 times. I didn't want to draw Patch's suspicion and backed off, he continued. That's when Elliot stepped forward, and it didn't take him long to tell me what I'd already guessed. Patch is in love with you.
It all clicked into place. Jules hadn't been sick the night he disappeared into the men's room at Delphic, and he hadn't been sick the night we went to the borderline. All along, it was the simple fact that he had to remain invisible to Patch. The moment Patch saw him, it would all be over. Patch would know Jules, Chauncey, was up to something. Elliot was Jules's eyes and ears, feeding information back to him.
The plan was to kill you on the camping trip, but Elliot failed to convince you to come, Jules said. Earlier today, I followed you out of Blind Joe's and shot you. Imagine my surprise when I found I'd killed a bag lady dressed in your coat. But it all worked out.
His tone relaxed.
Here we are.
I shifted in my seat and the scalpel slid deeper into my jeans. If I wasn't careful, it would slip out of reach. If Jules forced me to stand, it might slide all the way down my pant leg, and that would be the end of that.
Let me guess what you're thinking,
said Jules, rising to his feet and sauntering to the front of the room.
You're starting to wish you'd never met Patch. You wish he'd never fallen in love with you. Go on. Laugh at the position he's put you in. Laugh at your own bad choice.
Hearing Jules talk about Patch's love filled me with irrational hope. I fumbled the scalpel out of my jeans and jumped from my seat.
Don't come near me, I'll stab you. I swear I will.
Jules made a guttural sound and flung his arm across the counter at the front of the room. Glass beakers shattered against the chalkboard, papers fluttering down. He strode toward me. In a panic, I brought the scalpel up as hard as I could. It met his palm, slicing through skin. Jules hissed and drew back. Not waiting, I plunged the scalpel down into his thigh. Jules gaped at the metal protruding from his leg. He jerked it out using both hands, his face contorting in pain. He opened his hands and the scalpel fell with a clatter. He took a faltering step toward me. I shrieked and dodged away, but my hip clipped the edge of a table. I lost my footing and tumbled down. The scalpel lay several feet away. Jules flipped me on my stomach and straddled me from behind. He pressed my face into the floor, crushing my nose and muffling my screams.
Valiant attempt, he grunted, but that won't kill me. I'm Nephilim. I'm immortal.
I grabbed for the scalpel, digging my toes into the floor to stretch those last vital inches. My fingers fumbled over it. I was so close, and then Jules was dragging me back. I brought my heel up hard between his legs. He groaned and went limp off to one side. I scrambled to my feet, but Jules rolled to the door, kneeling between me and it. His hair hung in his eyes. Beads of sweat trickled down his face. His mouth was lopsided, one half curled up in pain. Every muscle in my body was coiled, ready to spring into action.
Good luck trying to escape,
he said with a cynical smile that seemed to require a lot of effort.
You'll see what I mean.
Then he sank to the ground. Chapter 29. I had no idea where V was. The obvious thought came to me to think like Jules. Where would I hold V hostage if I were him? He wants to make it hard to escape, and hard to be found, I reasoned. I brought up a mental blueprint of the building, narrowing my attention to the upper levels. Chances were V was on the third floor, the highest in the school. Except for a small fourth floor, which was more of an attic than anything else. A narrow staircase accessible only from the third floor led up to it. There were two bungalow-style classrooms at the top, AP Spanish and the Ezine Lab. V was in the Ezine Lab. Just like that, I knew it. Moving as quickly as I could through the darkness, I felt my way up two flights of stairs. After some trial and error, I found the narrow staircase leading to the Ezine Lab. At the top, I pushed on the door. V, I called softly. She let out a small moan. It's me, I said, taking each step with care as I maneuvered up an aisle of desks, not wanting to knock over a chair and alert Jules to my location. Are you hurt? We need to get out of here. I found her huddled at the front of the room, hugging her knees to her chest.
Jules hit me over the head, she said, her voice rising. I think I passed out. Now I can't see. I can't see anything.
Listen to me. Jules cut the electricity, and the shades are drawn. It's just the darkness. Hold my hand. We have to get downstairs right now.
I think he damaged something. My head is throbbing. I really think I'm blind.
You're not blind, I whispered, giving her a small shake. I can't see either. We have to feel our way downstairs. We're going to leave through the exit by the athletics office.
He's got chains on all the doors.
A moment of rigid silence dropped between us. I remembered Jules wishing me luck escaping, and now I knew why. A perceptible chill rippled from my heart through the rest of my body. Not the door I came in, I said at last. The far east door is unlocked.
It must be the only one. I was with him when he chained the others. He said that way, nobody would be tempted to go outside while we played hide and seek. He said outside was out of bounds.
If the east door is the only one he left unlocked, he'll try to block it. He'll wait for us to come to him. But we're not going to. We're going out a window, I said, devising a plan off the top of my head. On the opposite end of the building. This end. Do you have your cell?
Jules took it.
When we get outside, we have to split up. If Jules chases us, he'll have to choose one of us to follow. The other will get help. I already knew who he'd choose. Jules had no use for V, except to lure me here tonight. Run as hard as you can and get to a phone. Call the police. Tell them Elliot is in the library.
Alive?
V asked, her voice trembling. I don't know. We stood huddled together, and I felt her pull her shirt up and wipe her eyes.
This is all my fault.
This is Jules's fault.
I'm scared.
We're going to be fine, I said, attempting to sound optimistic. I stabbed Jules in the leg with a scalpel. He's bleeding heavily. Maybe he'll give up chasing us and go get medical attention. A sob escaped V. We both knew I was lying. Jules's desire for revenge outweighed his wound. It outweighed everything. V and I crept down the stairs, keeping tight to the walls, until we were back on the main floor.
This way,
I whispered in her ear, holding her hand as we speed-walked down the hall, heading farther west. We hadn't walked very far when a guttural sound, not quite laughter, rolled out of the tunnel of darkness ahead.
Well, well, what do we have here?
Jules said. There was no face attached to his voice.
Run, I told V, squeezing her hand. He wants me. Call the police. Run!
V dropped my hand and ran. Her footsteps faded depressingly fast. I wondered briefly if Patch was still in the building, but it was more of a side thought. Most of my concentration went into not passing out, because once again, I found myself all alone with Jules.
It will take the police at least 20 minutes to respond, Jules told me, the tap of his shoes drawing closer. I don't need 20 minutes.
I turned and ran. Jules broke into a run behind me. Fumbling my hands over the walls, I turned right at the first intersection and raced down a perpendicular hall. Forced to rely on the walls to guide me, my hands slapped over the sharp edges of lockers and door jams, nicking my skin. I made another right, running as fast as I could for the double doors of the gymnasium. The only thought pounding through my head was that if I could get to my gym locker in time, I could lock myself inside it. The girls' locker room was wall-to-wall and floor-to-ceiling with oversized lockers. It would take Jules time to break into each one individually. If I was lucky, the police would arrive before he found me. I flung myself into the gym and ran for the attached girls' locker room. As soon as I pushed on the door handle, I felt a spike of cold terror. The door was locked. I rattled the handle again, but it didn't give. Spinning around, I searched frantically for another exit. But I was trapped in the gym. I fell back against the door, squeezed my eyes shut to stave off fainting, and listened to my breath hitch up. When I reopened my eyes, Jules was walking into the haze of moonlight trickling through the skylights. He'd knotted his shirt around his thigh. A stain of blood seeped through the fabric. He was left in a white undershirt and chinos. A gun was tucked into the waistband of his pants.
Please let me go,
I whispered. V told me something interesting about you. You're afraid of heights. He lifted his gaze to the rafters high above the gym. A smile split his face. The stagnant air was sodden with the smells of sweat and wood varnish. The heat had been turned off for spring break, and the temperature was icy. Shadows stretched back and forth across the polished floor as the moonlight broke through the clouds. Jules stood with his back to the bleachers, and I saw Patch move behind him.
"Did you attack Marcy Miller?" I asked Jules, ordering myself not to react and give Patch away.
"Elliot told me there's bad blood between the two of you. I didn't like the idea of someone else having the pleasure of tormenting my girl."
"And my bedroom window? Did you spy on me while I was sleeping?"
"Nothing personal."
Jules stiffened. He stepped forward suddenly and jerked on my wrist, spinning me around in front of him. I felt what I feared was the gun press into the nape of my neck.
"Take off your hat," Jules ordered Patch. "I want to see the expression on your face when I kill her. You're helpless to save her, as helpless as I was to do anything about the oath I swore to you."
Patch took a couple of steps closer. He moved easily, but I sensed his tightly reined caution. The gun probed deeper, and I winced.
"Take another step, and this will be her last breath," Jules warned.
Patch glanced at the distance between us, calculating how quickly he could cover it. Jules saw it, too.
"Don't try it," he said.
"You're not going to shoot her, Chauncey."
"No."
Jules squeezed the trigger. The gun clicked, and I opened my mouth to scream, but all that came out was a tremulous sob.
"Revolver," Jules explained. "The other five chambers are loaded."
"Ready to use those boxing moves you're always bragging about?" Patch said to my mind.
My pulse was all over the place, my legs barely holding me up.
"What?"
I stammered. Without warning, a rush of power coursed into me. The foreign force expanded to fill me. My body was completely vulnerable to Patch, all my strength and freedom forfeited as he took possession of me. Before I had time to realize just how much this loss of control terrified me, a crushing pain spiked through my hand, and I realized Patch was using my fist to punch Jules. The gun was knocked loose. It skidded across the gym floor out of reach. Patch commanded my hands to slam Jules backward against the bleachers. Jules tripped, falling into them. The next thing I knew, my hands were closing on Jules's throat, flinging his head back against the bleachers with a loud crack. I held him there, pressing my fingers into his neck. His eyes widened, then bulged. He was trying to speak, moving his lips unintelligibly, but Patch didn't let up.
"I won't be able to stay inside you much longer," Patch spoke to my thoughts. "It's not Heshvan, and I'm not allowed. As soon as I'm cast out, run. Do you understand? Run as fast as you can. Chauncey will be too weak and stunned to get inside your head. Run and don't stop."
A high humming sound whined through me, and I felt my body peeling away from Patch's. The vessels in Jules's neck jumped out, and his head drooped to one side.
"Come on," I heard Patch urge him. "Pass out. Pass out."
But it was too late. Patch vanished from inside me. He was gone so suddenly, I was left dizzy. My hands were in my control again, and they sprang away from Jules's neck on impulse. He gasped for air and blinked up at me. Patch was on the floor a few feet away, unmoving. I remembered what Patch had said and sprinted across the gym. I flung myself against the door, expecting to sail into the hall. Instead, it was like hitting a wall. I shoved the push bar, knowing the door was unlocked. 5 minutes ago, I'd come through it. I hurled all my weight against the door. It didn't open. I turned around, the adrenaline let down, causing my knees to shake.
"Get out of my mind!" I screamed at Jules.
Pulling himself up to sit on the lowest rise of the bleachers, Jules massaged his throat.
"No," he said.
I tried the door again. I got my foot up and kicked the push bar. I smacked my palms against the door's slit of a window.
"Help! Can anyone hear me? Help!"
Looking over my shoulder, I found Jules limping toward me, his injured leg buckling under each step. I squeezed my eyes shut, trying to focus my mind. The door would open as soon as I found his voice and swept it out. I searched every corner of my mind, but couldn't find him. He was somewhere deep, hiding from me. I opened my eyes. Jules was much closer. I was going to have to find another way out. Drilled into the wall above the bleachers was an iron ladder. It reached to the grid of rafters at the top of the gym. At the far end of the rafters, on the opposite wall, almost directly above where I stood, was an air shaft. If I could get to it, I could climb in and find another way down. I broke into a dead sprint past Jules and up the bleachers. My shoes slapped the wood, echoing through the empty space, making it impossible to hear whether Jules was following me. I got my footing on the first ladder rung and hoisted myself up. I climbed one rung, then another. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the drinking fountain far below. It was small, which meant I was high. Very high. "Don't look down," I ordered myself. "Concentrate on what's above." I tentatively climbed one more rung. The ladder rattled, not properly welded to the wall. Jules's laughter carried up to me, and my concentration slipped. Images of falling flashed in my mind. Logically, I knew he was planting them. Then my brain tilted, and I couldn't remember which way was up or down. I couldn't decipher which thoughts were mine and which belonged to Jules. My fear was so thick it blurred my vision. I didn't know where on the ladder I stood. Were my feet centered? Was I close to slipping? Clenching the rung with both hands, I pressed my forehead against my knuckles. "Breathe," I told myself. "Breathe." And then I heard it. The slow, agonizing sound of metal creaking. I closed my eyes to suppress a dizzy spell. The metal brackets securing the top of the ladder to the wall popped free. The metallic groan changed to a high-pitched whine as the next set of brackets down tore from the wall. I watched with a scream trapped in my throat as the entire top half of the ladder broke free. Locking my arms and legs around the ladder, I braced myself for the backward fall. The ladder wavered a moment in air, patiently succumbing to gravity. And then it all happened quickly. The rafters and skylights faded away into a dizzying blur. I fell down until suddenly the ladder slammed to a stop. It bounced up and down, perpendicular to the wall, 30 feet above the ground. The impact jerked my legs loose, my hands my only attachment to the ladder. "Help!" I screamed, my legs bicycling through air. The ladder lurched, dropping several more feet. One of my shoes slid down my foot, caught on my toe, then dropped. Far too long later, it hit the gym floor. I bit down on my tongue as the pain in my arms deepened. They were tearing out of their sockets. And then, through the fear and panic, I heard Patch's voice. "Block him out. Keep climbing. The ladder's intact." "I can't," I sobbed. "I'll fall." "Block him out. Close your eyes. Listen to my voice." Swallowing, I forced my eyes shut. I clung to Patch's voice and felt a sturdy surface take shape beneath me. My feet were no longer hanging in air. I felt one of the ladder rungs digging into the balls of my feet. Focusing with resolve on Patch's voice, I waited until the world crept back into place. Patch was right. I was on the ladder. It was upright, secured to the wall. I regained a measure of determination and continued climbing. At the top, I eased myself precariously onto the closest rafter. I got my arms around it, then swung my right leg up and over. I was facing the wall, with my back to the air shaft, but there was nothing I could do now. Very carefully, I rose up on my knees. Using all my concentration, I started inching backward across the expanse of the gym. But it was too late. Jules had climbed quickly, and now was less than 15 feet away from me. He climbed onto the rafter. Hand over hand, he dragged himself toward me. A dark slash on the inside of his wrist caught my eye. It intersected his veins at a 90-degree angle and was nearly black in color. To anyone else, it might have looked like a scar. To me, it meant so much more. The family connection was obvious. We shared the same blood, and it showed in our identical marks. We were both straddling the rafter, sitting face to face, 10 feet apart.
"Any last words?"
Jules said. I looked down, even though it made me dizzy. Patch was far below on the gym floor, still as death. Right then, I wanted to go back in time and relive every moment with him. One more secret smile, one more shared laugh, one more electric kiss. Finding him was like finding someone I didn't know I was searching for. He'd come into my life too late, and now was leaving too soon. I remembered him telling me he'd give up everything for me. He already had. He'd given up a human body of his own so I could live. I wobbled accidentally and instinctively dropped lower to balance myself. Jules's laughter carried like a cold whisper.
"It makes no difference to me whether I shoot you or you fall to your death."
"It does make a difference," I said, my voice small but confident. "You and I share the same blood." I lifted my hand precariously, showing him my birthmark. "I'm your descendant. If I sacrifice my blood, Patch will become human and you'll die. It's written in the Book of Enoch." Jules's eyes were devoid of light. They were trained on me, absorbing every word I spoke. I could tell by his expression that he was weighing my words. A flush rose in his face, and I knew he believed me.
"You!"
he sputtered. He slid toward me with frantic speed, simultaneously reaching into his waistband to draw the gun. Tears stung my eyes. With no time for second thoughts, I threw myself off the rafter. Chapter 30. A door opened and closed. I waited to hear footsteps approach, but the only sound came from the ticking of a clock, a rhythmic, steady pounding through the silence. The sound began to fade, winding down. I wondered if I would hear it stop completely. I suddenly feared that moment, unsure of what came after. A much more vibrant sound eclipsed the clock. It was a reassuring, ethereal sound, a melodic dance on air. "Wings," I thought, "coming to take me away." I held my breath, waiting, waiting, waiting. And then the clock began to go in reverse. Instead of slowing, the beat became more certain. A spiral-like liquid formed inside me, coiling deeper and deeper. I felt myself pulled into the current. I was sliding down through myself, into a dark, warm place. My eyes flickered open to familiar oak paneling on the sloped ceiling above me. My bedroom. A sense of reassurance flooded over me, and then I remembered where I'd been. In the gym with Jules. A shiver slid over my skin.
"Patch,"
I said, my voice hoarse from disuse. I tried to sit up, then gave a muffled cry. Something was wrong with my body. Every muscle, bone, cell was sore. I felt like one giant bruise. There was movement near the doorway. Patch leaned against the door jamb. His mouth was pressed tight and lacked its usual twinge of humor. His eyes held more depth than I'd ever seen before. They were sharpened by a protective edge.
"That was a good fight back in the gym," he said. "But I think you could benefit from a few more boxing lessons."
On a wave, everything came back to me. Tears rolled up from deep inside me.
"What happened? Where is Jules? How did I get here?"
My voice cracked with panic.
"I threw myself off the rafter."
"That took a lot of courage."
Patch's voice turned husky, and he stepped all the way inside my bedroom. He closed the door behind him, and I knew it was his way of trying to lock out all the bad. He was putting a divide between me and everything that had happened. He walked over and sat on the bed beside me.
"What else do you remember?"
I tried to piece my memories together, working backward. I remembered the beating wings I'd heard shortly after I flung myself off the rafter. Without any doubt, I knew I'd died. I knew an angel had come to carry my soul away. "I'm dead, aren't I?" I said quietly, reeling with fright. "Am I a ghost?"
"When you jumped, the sacrifice killed Jules. Technically, when you came back, he should have too. But since he didn't have a soul, he had nothing to revive his body."
"I came back?" I said, hoping I wasn't filling myself with false hope.
"I didn't accept your sacrifice. I turned it down."
I felt a small O form at my mouth, but it never quite made it past my lips. "Are you saying you gave up getting a human body for me?" He lifted my bandaged hand. Underneath all the gauze, my knuckles throbbed from punching Jules. Patch kissed each finger, taking his time, keeping his eyes glued to mine.
"What good is a body if I can't have you?"
Heavier teardrops rolled down my cheeks, and Patch pulled me to him, tucking my head against his chest. Very slowly, the panic edged away, and I knew it was all over. I was going to be all right. Suddenly, I pulled away. If Patch had turned down the sacrifice, then... "You saved my life." "Turn around," I ordered solemnly. Patch gave a sly smile and indulged my request. I rocked his t-shirt up to his shoulders. His back was smooth, defined muscle. The scars were gone.
"You can't see my wings," he said. "They're made of spiritual matter."
"You're a guardian angel now." I was still too much in awe to wrap my mind around it, but at the same time, I felt amazement, curiosity, happiness.
"I'm your guardian angel," he said.
"I get my very own guardian angel? What exactly is your job description?"
"Guard your body," his smile tipped higher. "I take my job seriously, which means I'm going to need to get acquainted with the subject matter on a personal level."
My stomach went all fluttery. "Does this mean you can feel now?" Patch watched me in silence for a moment.
"No, but it does mean I'm not blacklisted."
Downstairs, I heard the quiet rumble of the garage door gliding open. "My mom!" I gasped. I found the clock on the nightstand. It was just after 2 a.m. "They must have opened the bridge. How does this whole guardian angel business work? Am I the only person who can see you? I mean, are you invisible to everyone else?" Patch stared at me like he hoped I wasn't serious. "You're not invisible?" I squeaked. "You have to get out of here." I made a movement to push Patch off the bed, but was cut short by a searing jab in my ribs. "She'll kill me if she finds you in here. Can you climb trees? Tell me you can climb a tree." Patch grinned.
"I can fly."
"Oh, right. Well, okay."
"The police and fire department were here earlier," Patch said. "The master bedroom will need to be gutted, but they stopped the fire from spreading. The police will be back. They're going to have a few questions. If I had to guess, they already tried reaching you on the cell you called 911 on."
Jules took it. He nodded.
"I figured. I don't care what you tell the police, but I'd appreciate it if you left me out of it."
He slid my bedroom window open.
"Last thing, V got to the police in time. Paramedics saved Elliot. He's in the hospital, but he'll be all right."
Down the hall, at the bottom of the stairs, I heard the house door shut. My mom was inside.
"Nora?"
she called. She tossed her purse and keys on the entry table. Her high heels clicked across the wood floors, almost at a running pace.
"Nora! There's police tape on the front door! What is going on?"
I looked to the window. Patch was gone, but a single black feather was pressed to the outer pane, held in place by last night's rain, or angel magic. Downstairs, my mom flicked on the hall light, a faint ray of it stretching all the way under the crack at the bottom of my door. I held my breath and counted seconds, assuming I had about 2 more before... she shrieked.
Nora! What happened to the banister?
Good thing she hadn't seen her bedroom yet. The sky was a perfect rinsed blue. The sun was just starting to fan out across the horizon. It was Monday, a brand new day, the horrors of the past 24 hours far behind. I had 5 hours of sleep under my belt, and other than the all-over body pain that came from being sucked into death, then spat back out, I felt remarkably refreshed. I didn't want to hang a black cloud over the moment by reminding myself that the police were expected to arrive any minute to take my statement on the night's events. I still hadn't made up my mind what I was going to tell them. I padded to the bathroom in my nightshirt, mentally blocking the question of how I'd changed into it, since I'd presumably been wearing clothes when Patch brought me home, and sped through my morning routine. I splashed cold water on my face, scrubbed my teeth, and tamed my hair back into a rubber band. In my bedroom, I pulled on a clean shirt, clean jeans. I called V. "How are you doing?" I asked.
"Good. How are you?"
"Good." Silence.
"Okay," V said in a rush. "I am still totally freaked out. You?"
"Totally.
Patch called me in the middle of the night. He said Jules roughed you up pretty bad, but that you were okay."
"Really? Patch called you?"
"He called from the Jeep. He said you were asleep in the back seat and he was driving you home. He said he just happened to be driving past the high school when he heard a scream. He said he found you in the gym, but that you'd fainted from pain. The next thing he knew, he looked up and saw Jules jump off the rafter. He said Jules must have snapped, a side effect from all the burdensome guilt he felt over terrorizing you."
I didn't realize I was holding my breath until I let go of it. Obviously, Patch had manipulated a few details.
"You know, I'm not buying it," V continued. "You know, I think Patch killed Jules."
"In V's position, I'd probably think similarly," I said. "What do the police think?"
"Turn on the TV. There's live coverage right now, Channel 5. They're saying Jules broke into the school and jumped. They're ruling it a tragic teen suicide. They're asking people with information to call the hotline listed at the bottom of the screen."
"What did you tell the police when you first called it in?"
"I was scared. I didn't want to get busted for B&E. So I called in anonymously from a payphone."
"Well," I said at last, "if the police are ruling it a suicide, I guess that's what happened. After all, this is modern-day America. We have the benefit of forensics."
"You're keeping something from me," said V. "What really happened after I left?"
This is where it got sticky. V was my best friend, and we lived by the motto, "No secrets." But some things are just impossible to explain. The fact that Patch was a fallen-turned-guardian angel topped the list. Directly below it was the fact that I jumped off a rafter and died, but was still alive today. "I remember Jules cornering me in the gym," I said. "He told me all the pain and fear he was going to inflict. After that, the details get hazy."
"Is it too late to apologize?" V said, sounding more sincere than she had in our whole friendship. "You were right about Jules and Elliot."
"Apology accepted."
"We should go to the mall," she said. "I feel this overwhelming need to buy shoes. Lots of them. What we need is some good old-fashioned shoe shopping therapy."
The doorbell rang and I glanced at the clock. "I have to give the police my statement about what happened last night, but I'll call you after that."
"Last night?" V's tone shot up with panic. "They know you were at the school? You didn't give them my name, did you?"
"Actually, something happened earlier in the night. Something named Dabria." "I'll call you soon," I said, hanging up before I had to lie my way through another explanation. Limping down the hall, I'd made it as far as the top of the stairs when I saw who my mom had invited inside. Detectives Basso and Holstiek. She led them into the living room, and although Detective Holstiek collapsed onto the sofa, Detective Basso remained standing. He had his back to me, but a step creaked halfway through my descent, and he turned around.
"Nora Gray," he said in his tough cop voice. "We meet again."
My mom blinked. "You've met before?"
"Your daughter has an exciting life. Seems like we're here every week."
My mom aimed a questioning glance at me, and I shrugged, clueless, as if to guess, cop humor?
"Why don't you have a seat, Nora, and tell us what happened?" Detective Holstiek said.
I lowered myself into one of the plush armchairs opposite the sofa. "Just before 9 last night, I was in the kitchen drinking a glass of chocolate milk when Miss Green, my school psychologist, appeared."
"She just walked into your house?" Detective Basso asked.
"She told me I had something she wanted, and that's when I ran upstairs and locked myself in the master bedroom."
"Back up," said Detective Basso. "What was this thing she wanted?"
"She didn't say, but she did mention she's not a real psychologist. She said she was using the job to spy on students." I divided a glance among everyone. "She's crazy, right?" The detectives shared a look.
"I'll run her name, see what I can find," Detective Holstiek said, pulling himself back to his feet. "Let me get this straight," Detective Basso said to me. "She accused you of stealing something that belonged to her, but she never said what?"
Another sticky question. "She was hysterical. I only understood half of what she was saying. I ran and locked myself inside the master bedroom, but she broke down the door. I was hiding inside the flue of the fireplace, and she said she'd burn the house down room by room to find me. Then she started a fire right there in the middle of the room."
"How did she start the fire?" my mom asked. "I couldn't see. I was in the flue."
"This is crazy," Detective Basso said, shaking his head. "I've never seen anything like this."
"Is she going to come back?" my mom asked the detectives, coming over to stand behind me and placing her hands protectively on my shoulders. "Is Nora safe?"
"Might want to see about getting a security system installed."
Detective Basso opened his wallet and held out a card to Mom.
"I vouch for these guys. Tell them I sent you, and they'll give you a discount."
A few hours after the detectives left, the doorbell rang again. "That must be the alarm system company," Mom said, meeting me in the hall. "I called, and they said they'd send a guy out today. I can't stand the thought of sleeping here without some kind of protection, until they find Miss Green and lock her away. Didn't the school even bother to check her references?" She opened the door, and Patch stood on the porch. He wore faded Levi's and a snug white T-shirt, and he held a toolbox in his left hand.
"Good afternoon, Mrs. Gray."
"Patch." I couldn't quite nail my mom's tone. Surprise mixed with discomfiture. "Are you here to see Nora?" Patch smiled.
"I'm here to spec your house for a new alarm system."
"I thought you had a different job," said Mom. "I thought you bussed tables at the Borderline."
"I got a new job."
Patch locked eyes with me, and I warmed in a lot of places. In fact, I was dangerously close to feverish.
"Outside?"
he asked me. I followed him out to his motorcycle. "We still have a lot to talk about," I said.
"Talk?"
He shook his head, his eyes full of desire. "Kiss," he whispered to my thoughts. It wasn't a question, but a warning. He grinned when I didn't protest and lowered his mouth toward mine. The first touch was just that, a touch, a teasing, tempting softness. I licked my lips, and Patch's grin deepened.
"More?" he asked.
I curled my hands into his hair, pulling him closer. "More."
Hush Hush was written by Becca Fitzpatrick and read by Caitlin Greer. It was recorded at CDM Studios in New York. Editing and post-production by Danny Meltzer. The associate producer was Travis Tan. Hush Hush was produced and directed by Scott Sherritt. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.